This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guests are two great actors who are also married, Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy. Huffman has recently become a household name as a result of her role on Desperate Housewives as Lynette. She also starred in the critically acclaimed but short-lived series Sports Night. William H. Macy is currently in Sahara. He received an Oscar nomination for his role in The Cooler and won writing and acting Emmys for the telemovie Door to Door. His other movies include Seabiscuit, Fargo, Boogie Nights, and Homicide. Now Macy is the executive producer of a new movie that stars Felicity Huffman called Transamerica. It played last month at the Tribeca Film Festival, where Huffman won the Best Actress Award. It's scheduled to open theatrically at the end of the year. Huffman plays a transsexual man who is preparing to have final gender reassignment surgery and is already passing as a genetic female. In this scene, she's being evaluated for the surgery by a psychiatrist. This scene and parts of the interview may not be appropriate for young children.
Do you consider yourself a happy person?
Yes. I mean, no. I mean, I will be.
Miss Osborne, there's no such thing as a right answer in this office.
Yes, I'm a very happy person.
How can I help you if you won't be honest with me?
You can sign that consent form, please.
The American Psychiatric Association categorizes gender dysphoria as a very serious mental disorder.
After my operation, not even a gynecologist will be able to detect anything out of the ordinary about my body. I will be a woman. Don't you find it odd that plastic surgery can cure a mental disorder?
How do you feel about your penis?
It disgusts me. I don't even like looking at it.
What about friends?
They don't like it either.
No, I mean, do you have the support of friends?
I'm very close to my therapist.
What about your family?
My family is dead.
Soon after this session, she receives a phone call from a teenage runaway looking for his father and learns she fathered him in a brief relationship. When she goes to bail him out of jail, her life is thrown off course. Felicity Huffman, William H. Macy, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Felicity, in Transamerica, you play a woman playing a man who is transforming himself into a woman. So the obvious first question is, how come you were cast in the role and not a man?
It's a great question, and it's one that I actually asked myself and the director. After I got the job, I called Duncan Tucker, who's the director and the writer, and I tried to convince him to cast a man in it. I went, thank you so much for the part. Now you really ought to cast a man because, you know, not to be crass, but everybody knows what's under my skirt. And he said very astutely that the movie is not about what's under your skirt. The movie is about becoming who you really are. And he wanted to be true to the essence of a transgendered woman, which would be that they're a woman, as opposed to the externals.
Now, the kind of woman that you're playing as a man who's becoming a woman is a different kind of woman than I suspect you are. In other words...
What are you saying?
Here's exactly what I'm saying, that he's kind of inhabiting a kind of woman who is... probably female in a way that's slightly different than you are, with an almost studied wiggle in the walk. Mm-hmm. And, we'll talk about learning the voice in a second, but he's learned how to be a woman, and you just are a woman. And there's a certain type of female manner that I think people who are transsexuals adopt that's a little different than a lot of women who are just women, who are in some ways less feminine.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a journey, because most transgendered people who are transgendered do it later in life when they actually have the finances to do it, because it's very expensive. And also, you know, after quite a few years, 30 or 40, of struggling with this decision, because, you know, they're caught between a rock and a hard place. Either they can be alienated from themselves, you know, not presenting who they really are, or they can have the sexual reassignment surgery, and then they're going to be alienated from society. So it takes a long time before you're willing to sacrifice society for yourself, if that's clear. And the reason I preface that is because you take a 40-year-old guy and you say, all right, starting tomorrow, I want you to wear a dress and earrings and makeup and present to the world as a woman, because you have to dress as a woman for a year before you are okayed for the sexual reassignment surgery. And, you know, they're they don't know how to do that.
A lot of women don't know how to do that.
Yeah, myself included. So, yeah, I think what I chose for Sabrina Claire Osborne, which is what my name was in the movie, Bree, it was a very studied, learned, almost beauty pageant kind of femininity, because she had to go to that extreme to learn it before she could find it in herself. I think in the last scene of the movie, you can see her being a little more settled in her own femininity. I also happen to know a lot of transgendered women who, you know, are completely comfortable being a woman and aren't that sort of mannerisms, don't have those kind of mannerisms that I adopted in the movie.
Felicity, the movie starts with you're a character watching a videotape of a woman demonstrating for pre-op transsexuals how to place their voice so that they sound more like a woman. And that's the kind of thing your character tries to achieve through the movie. And there's something that's so convincing about what you've done with your voice for the film. Could you talk a little bit about placing it for the movie?
Sure. Let me give you some background, though. sexual reassignment surgery and hormone therapy does not alter the vocal cords. So you can have someone that looks like Kate Moss sound like James Earl Jones. And it's one of the most difficult challenges they have, because it's hard to find your female voice. And the woman at the beginning of the movie who you see in the videotape is Andrea James. And that's one of the things she does, is she coaches, as you said, she coaches men how to sound like women. And, you know, you want to sound authentic. You don't want to sound like a guy, but you also don't want to sound like Tony Curtis in Some Like It Hot. Women don't even have the chest cavity or the head cavity that men have to drop it down. I mean, you saw Andrea on that film go, oh, you know, finish up for me, Bill. She went, she went down like that. So I couldn't find a way to do it. And I knew it was key. And I finally we were rehearsing in New York, and I went to a wonderful voice coach named Katie Bull. And through a bunch of work, we figured out how to find a voice that sounded like it was in transition, which is as close as I could get.
So the interesting thing about what you're doing with your voice is that it's lower than your actual voice as a woman, but it's higher
by about 4 octaves. Yeah,
wow.
Lay some on her. It's odd.
I can't get there without a.
You did it a minute ago.
Talk amongst yourselves.
There it goes. I heard her.
Hi, Terry. Hi. I'm really happy to be here at NPR.
That's about as low as I can get right now.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so it's much lower than your voice, but it's probably higher than a lot of men's voices. So you had to find something in between.
The thing that Felicity did that's so great in this film is that we now all know her very well because of Desperate Housewives, and you look at this character, and you know it's Felicity in there somewhere, but it's just all a little wrong. It was perfect. She really has done a number. She erased her face somehow. I don't know how she did it. And then painted it back on. So it's her face, but it's just not right somehow.
I noticed that actually just watching it. And what I was thinking about that was that, Felicity, tell me if you think this is right, that you didn't want to. Your face is almost like a mask in the movie, as if you're trying to not betray too much of what you're feeling. Because what you're feeling at this point is such kind of confusion.
No, she's not feeling confusion. What she's feeling is intense, and I can't think of the right word, it's like intense Mach 4 of self-consciousness, because she doesn't represent to the world the way she feels inside. So all she can hope is she comes in under the radar, you know, just don't look at me. I'm not tall. I'm not big. You know, she doesn't know how to do her makeup. You know, her hair's a little funky from the hormones, which happens. And so it's not that she's lost. It's that...
What's the phrase they use when they're made? When they're
clocked.
Clocked. When someone realizes that it's a transgendered person, they're clocked. And that's the biggest fear.
Yeah, they just... Yeah, they live in... Yeah, it's horrible because you're pointed out as, a freak.
So Felicity, you won a Best Acting Award at the Tribeca mm-hmm. Film Festival. So, Bill Macy, what's the next step with the movie, you know, as a producer of it? Now what?
Harvey Weinstein has bought it for his new company, and it will be released late in the year, December, hopefully. And it will go on to make $100 million domestically and break all records in Europe.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy. And she's starring in this movie, Transamerica, that he produced. And now, Bill Macy, the last time you were on Fresh Air, this was like 1993, we talked a lot about your approach to acting and what you'd learned from working with David Mamet in theater and in movies. And I remember you talking about how you're not into the method, mm-hmm. and you're into always asking, like, what's your motive? Like, why? What do you want the other person to do? What are you trying? What action are you trying to get them to do with what you're saying? And it's kind of different from, like, the method approach of, like, drawing on your deepest emotional memories that might approximate what the character is going through. Do you both have the same approach to acting? Do you?
I think we do, and I think Transamerica is an excellent example of that. Felicity has a serious characterization to do. Her voice is different, her walk is different, her look is different. Every physical thing about her is different. But why the film works so well is that she didn't forget to act, and that happens so often for an actor. When it's a high-wire act with this characterization, you forget to act. You forget to look at the other person. And the reason the film works so well is that it's just her, ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we approach work the same way. I mean, I was constantly, because Bill was home a lot with the girls, I would say several times a day I was calling Bill for coaching on a scene, and we work that way a lot. I call him from Desperate Housewives.
What kind of advice do you ask?
Oh, I read the scene over there. I fax him the scene or the rewrites, and we read it together, and I sort of say, what do you think it means? What do you think she wants? How should I approach it?
We do it with each other. Sometimes you can miss the forest for the trees when it's a scene.
Yeah, I can, yeah.
When it's a scene, you have to act in moments, really. An outsider can look at it with... A little bit fresher eye, really.
Bill Macy, you became well-known before Felicity Huffman did. And now, Felicity Huffman, you're very well-known yourself through Desperate Housewives. Did you ever worry about an imbalance of fame or success within the relationship? I mean, that's in some relationships a real problem if one person becomes well known or successful in their line of work before their partner does. And that for some people it doesn't really matter, for others it could be a real problem.
Felicity's always been nothing but generous with me. It exists for me. If my career were suddenly in the toilet, I think it would be an issue for me, but so far, I love her success, and I'm in no hurry to go back to work. And she can support me in the manner to which I'd like to be accustomed for a long time before it's going to hurt my ego.
But for a long time, you were well known, and Felicity Huffman, you weren't known at all, or barely. So was that problematic for you?
I can honestly say, and it's not because I'm virtuous, I've never had a moment's problem with it. I think because it was the way it was when we got together. I mean, when we got together, Bill wasn't known on the level he's known now, but he was known as a great actor around New York City, and he's always been the kind of actor, and the level of his game is something that I aspire to. So I sort of came in doing that, you know. I knew where it was, and you know, he's always, I don't know how to say this, but you're just always better than I am and smarter than I am, and so I like it.
How did you both meet, Bill?
The Atlantic Theater Company.
Through the Atlantic Theater Company in New York City.
You were both acting in it.
I was teaching and Felicity was a student, but I didn't touch her, Terry. I didn't touch her until long after she had graduated, hours after she had graduated.
Oh, so
can't believe you said that. I was so willing to go around it.
The word's out. There's no hiding anymore.
All right. Was that awkward while you were her teacher?
We didn't get together until after I was graduated.
The company had
it
been
was the
formed
theater
for a while.
Company. Yeah.
Our relationship was really more of company members.
Yeah.
And
except that all the girls had crushes on Bill, I have to tell you.
Now she tells me.
let me play a scene of you together, and this is from the series Sports Night, in which Felicity Huffman, you played a producer of an ESPN-type sports show. And Bill Macy, for a few episodes, you played a consultant who's brought in to boost the ratings, and you have very strong opinions of how to do that, and you're trying to tell the producers what they should be doing to improve the show. So here's a scene where you've come into the control room and you're telling the producer, Felicity Huffman, what she should do.
Hey.
Good evening.
Show seems a little stiff tonight, don't you think?
Yes, I do.
Maybe even stiffer than last night.
I believe it is.
You know why?
Because you're freaking everyone out?
Could be.
Stand by 57 and 58.
You know what I'd do if I were you?
Kill myself?
No, I'd whisper in their ear.
I beg your pardon?
The two of you, whisper something in their ear.
What are you talking about?
Men like the sound of a woman whispering in their ear. They get playful.
Why don't we just get them a lap dance?
No, we don't have that kind of time, but I like your thinking.
Listen.
Whisper in their ear.
I'm not whispering in their ear. Natalie's not whispering in their ear.
If you want,
Kim's not whispering in their ear. You've gotten everything you've wanted. We've been totally cooperative, but I'm afraid from 11 to 12, this is my show. And I'll deal with things the way I deal with things.
Okay.
That's William H. Macy and Felicity Huffman in a scene from the former ABC series Sports Night, which is out on DVD. So when you worked on that together, did you talk, again, you know, like your approach to acting has to do with what are you getting the other person to do by saying what you say? Did you talk about that kind of thing with each other, or should you not show your cards to each other when you're going to be in a scene together?
No, we totally show our cards to each other. Yeah. It's not a...
It doesn't, like, diminish the power or anything because the other character knows how you're trying to manipulate them.
No, because it lives in the moment. It doesn't live in what you practiced in the dressing room or at rehearsal in the afternoon. It lives in the moment. And if Bill does something different, I'll react differently. And if I do something different, he reacts differently. So you don't bring in something you rehearsed earlier. You live in the moment, and that's constantly changing.
And it's not as if it's a secret. I mean, if a scene is well written, it's pretty clear what's going on. The playwright is not out to trick us. He's out to make it as clear as possible.
Yeah. And Aaron Sorkin, wasn't it fun to hear that?
Oh, well, that guy can write.
That guy can write.
He could do it professionally.
Yeah, he could.
So this scene sounds like it was a lot of fun to do.
That whole series was fun to do.
It was fantastic. It was so great to have Bill come on. And we got to make out and get paid for it.
I always think that when you start out doing David Mamet plays, as you both did, that in some ways it's got to be all downhill from there. I mean, how many people write dialogue on that level? Have you ever felt, either of you, in roles where, like it was, you know, it was a good part, you should be doing it, but it just wasn't kind of reaching that level that you wanted?
I think various scripts bring various things to the table. David can certainly write dialogue as well or better than anybody else, but sometimes there's a great story to be told, or sometimes it's a great character to play, or sometimes the dynamic with all the characters. There's different elements to the party each time. It doesn't have to be mammoth dialogue each time.
Mm-hmm.
Also, mammoth dialogue is a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's fun to speak, but it's impossible to learn and very complicated.
Why? And difficult to do well.
Why is it complicated and difficult?
He writes in iambic pentameter most of the time, and it's a very the wording is very specific, and it's not casual.
It's not casual at all. Sometimes when you read a mammoth script, it takes you three or four readings just to understand exactly what the characters say. And interestingly, when you read it, you'll read a sentence on the page and you're not sure what it means, but the second you say it out loud, it's clear.
Yeah.
He has a tendency to cut some of the words out of a speech, as we do in natural speech.
Mm-hmm.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy, two great actors who are also married. They collaborated on the new film Transamerica. Macy is the executive producer. Huffman stars as a transsexual who's preparing to undergo final gender reassignment surgery and is already passing as a woman. It opens later this year. Macy's movies include The Cooler, Fargo, Boogie Nights, and Homicide. Huffman is now one of the stars of Desperate Housewives. She plays Lynette, a woman who gave up her career to raise her four children. Lately, she thinks her husband has lost interest in her, and she's afraid it's because his former girlfriend has just started working in his office. In a recent episode, she tried to spice up the marriage by dressing in a French maid's costume, but fell asleep before he came home from work. Here's what happened the next morning. Her husband is played by Doug Savant.
Honey, you were wearing a French maid's costume. I mean, come on. What were you thinking?
I was thinking our marriage was in trouble and one of us ought to do something to try and save it.
Whoa, since when is our marriage in trouble? Okay, so we haven't had sex for a few days. Big deal, it happens.
Oh, that's Annabelle. How ironic.
How is Annabelle relevant to this conversation?
Because she now comes to this house every morning to remind you of what I'm not.
What?
She's the fantasy, Tom. The hot woman that you work with every day with her manicured nails and her designer outfits. I am the reality. The wife who never wears makeup and whose clothes smell like a hamper.
Okay, this may be the stupidest thing you've ever said.
I used to be the fantasy. There was a time when I didn't need a maid's outfit because I knew I was enough for you, even wearing a smelly t-shirt. And clearly, that's no longer the case.
Okay, honey, I don't know what to say. Look, if there's a way for me to fix this, I will do it. You just tell me and I will do it.
No, there's nothing to fix. We've changed. That's all I'm saying.
You know how you were talking about before that the way things work out, one of you works on a film or TV show while the other stays home, takes care of your two children, and you try, I guess, to alternate with that. Felicity Huffman, when you were offered a part in Desperate Housewives, did that create a big discussion about the amount of time that it would take to do it and who would take care of the children? And Bill Macy, what effect would that have on your career?
Well, you know, you never know if those things are going to go. I've done so many pilots, and a lot of them have been wonderful, and they've died an untimely death. But, you know, the prerequisites that I needed before I'd go in an audition on something was that it had to be ensemble and that it had to shoot in L.A. And since I can't do sitcoms and have been fired off several, I decided not to go for sitcoms. So with that, I knew I would shoot in L.A. so I could be home, and it was part of an ensemble, so God willing, I wouldn't work every day. Thank you, Mark Cherry. That's what I got.
You were fired from sitcoms?
I knew you'd pick up on that.
Yeah, I was.
I've
also killed several of them.
Why were you fired?
I was bad. I'm not kidding you, I was bad. My best friend, I remember one I did, and we shot the pilot, and it was with an audience, and my best friend came, and a member of the Atlantic Theater Company, she was so sweet, she brought me flowers, she was like, congratulations, and I said, what'd you think, and she goes, oh, you're pretty bad, and sure enough, I got fired.
But anyways, getting back to the series in general, did you think it was going to like be a subject of the culture wars when when you started? Do you think it would get to that level?
Well, again, I have to preface this by saying, you know, you never think it's going to get out of the box. You know, I mean, I've learned that over the years. You do a pilot and you go, I wonder what I'm going to do after the pilot, because you never think it's going to get picked up. And gosh, you never think it's going to have the ride that Desperate Housewives did. And in terms of it being, you know, a cultural phenomenon from the standpoint of my character, I mean, the reason I was attracted to Lynette, because I swore I would never play a mother and I didn't want to play a wife, because I found them two-dimensional and I found them not to be true to my experience of either one of those jobs, I guess I would say, that Mark Cherry wrote a portrait of motherhood that spoke to me. I know it's not everybody's, but I felt that my experience of motherhood, which is that it's phenomenally difficult and crazy-making, and you lose yourself, and you can't remember what it was like, and you're really ugly, and most of the time you're fat. And it's not out there socially, and it's not out there in the media. You know, the most you can get from mothers is like, yeah, I'm really tired. But my experience was I'd turn to mothers and I'd go, I'm losing my mind and I can't do this and I love this kid, but I'm obviously, this is not the job for me. And they'd go, huh, but don't you love being a mother? And I'd go, it's so much more difficult. That question doesn't even apply. So that's the long way of getting back to, did I think it would be a cultural phenomenon? No, but it spoke to me on that sociological level, because I've experienced that. You know, it's the idealization of motherhood. It's that motherhood is one of the last icons, and there's one way to do it. And that makes me crazy, and I think Mark writes to that, and I appreciate it. So that's why I took it, and I'm glad that it's hit a nerve with mothers. Not all mothers. I certainly know I'm not speaking for them all, but I just feel like that experience was silent.
Felicity Huffman in Transamerica, in which you play a preoperative transsexual, your character still has a male body in the movie, mm-hmm. and as you said, the movie's kind of a road trip, and you're in the car with the young man you've just found out is your teenage son, mm-hmm. who you fathered before.
Yes.
Before you decided to become a transsexual, but mm-hmm. but anyways, there's a scene where you have to relieve yourself, and so you have a prosthetic genital there.
I do,
That's kind of interesting because we see this from a distance, and you look very uncomfortable. I mean, obviously you don't want to be seen, but also you just look uncomfortable in your own body at that point, and
more uncomfortable than I have before. Are you saying I look uncomfortable handling Andy?
That's what I'm saying.
I call him Andy.
That's what I'm delicately saying.
I felt when I saw that scene where she's relieving herself beside the car, I thought it was sort of wonderful, that discomfort that you're talking about. You could see it, that this here is a woman who's stuck in the wrong body, and I thought it showed in that scene.
And Felicity, I thought it must be interesting, must have been interesting for you to have that prosthetic and to be in a man's body for a moment.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When we started shooting in New York, Andy was not on the scene. And at the first day of shooting, I realized something was missing.
Happens to me all the time.
And I turned to the wonderful Kate Bailey, who was helping me out on the movie, and I said, is there such a thing as Andy? And she went to some store where men get them for their swimming suits, and I am not kidding. And so I got Andy, and my undergarments, I spoke to a lot of transgendered women and in various stages of their transformation. And some of them wear really tight underwear, then pantyhose over that, and then a girdle. So that not only is everything tucked in, but, you know, they have a shape a little bit. They have a waist. And I did that because I needed the rigidity, and I needed the feeling of discomfort. And I also wore Andy in there because it just felt, it just added to the alienation that I needed to play the part. And except in Arizona when it was about 120 in the shade. And then, you know, two was a crowd. And actually, you know, that scene where Bree is on the side of the road relieving herself and her son sees that she is indeed a guy, that was added. We were up in the high desert in Arizona, and Duncan came to me and said, you know, I think we might want this scene, because it wasn't going to be shot before. It was just him looking back, and you infer what Toby sees. But Duncan wanted it shot, and so it's funny because, you know, I always say I'm not a method actor, but I have to say, when Duncan said, we really have to see Bree's penis, I burst into tears because I felt so exposed and so embarrassed. You know, and I'd done that nude scene in the bathtub and all that stuff, but that felt so intimate. And I think that is the part living in you, you know, in the best of circumstances, hopefully that happens.
Is that uncommon for you to almost break into tears because the character would be so uncomfortable?
Not when I'm actually shooting, not when it's in a scene, but just because it's not how I approach the work, you know, that I don't recognize it when that happens, when the character lives in me, until afterwards. I mean, I was talking to someone a couple of weeks ago, and I went, oh, that's what that moment was about. I thought I was just tired, but no, I think it was the character of Bree living in me that didn't want to show what she wished wasn't there.
Bill Macy, in one of your recent movies, The Cooler, you had a sex scene with Maria Bello.
Sex scene? Right,
okay, several. And we also got to see you naked from behind. And I guess I'm wondering if, you know, I think that was like the first time on screen that you were naked from behind. Was that like an issue for you? And I ask you this in part because it got so much attention. Like, people were saying, oh, AC's doing a sex scene. Did I mention you got nominated for an Oscar for this? I mean, not only for the naked part, but even for the role. It was like an important role. But I guess I'm wondering whether that was something that made you uncomfortable, how you reacted to the reaction to it.
I was nervous about it. I'm north of 50 years old, so the idea of taking off my clothes in front of all the world was daunting. But Maria Bello is very, very cool about it, and she said it was no big deal. Felicity was supportive about it. She said, you've got a nice rear end. And ultimately, just like anything, if it advances the plot, if it's good storytelling, I'm willing to do it. And the only thing that I wish is that I'd started working out a little bit earlier before I had to do that. But yeah, it made me nervous. I had my acting teacher was on set with me. His name's Jim Beam. That helped a lot.
Oh, I get it. I was going to say, what a coincidence. Well, but that could really dull your senses, that Jim Beam.
That's what I needed, dulled senses. It looks like it would be. I just had to watch Felicity making out for an hour on ABC the other night.
I kissed Doug Savant. That's all I did. Bill is naked with Maria Bello, who's, what, 10 years younger than me and
kiss
stunning.
Doug Savant.
And shut up. Shut up.
Surgery
and like
on his
10
mouth.
10 pounds lighter than me. Bill's running around naked. She's like got her hands on young Will and the twins. I mean, it's unbelievable. But suddenly he can't look at me because I'm going to be kissing Doug Savant.
No, I know you're kidding each other now, but is it, does it really make you uncomfortable when you see that?
I hate it.
You're so sweet.
I hate it. I just don't watch. I sort of look away and hum so I can look, so I can't even hear the dialogue. I don't need to see that. What am I going to say to her? Hey, good job, honey. Boy, that guy's going to stay kissed for a while.
Bill, another question. When you started to become, like, much better known, and I think, like, maybe Fargo was a really big turning point, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who might not have been aware of you before were very aware of you after that, and that your subsequent films just kind of built on that, and you became better and better and known. But it seems in some ways that when you become a successful actor, you end up being offered roles in movies that you wouldn't necessarily like, because some of the really big box office, high-paying movies aren't necessarily the kind of movies that, you know, they're not necessarily the kind of movies you'd go see or that would really speak to your sensibility. Do you know what I mean? I'm not talking mm-hmm. about you. I'm talking about one in general, you know, like actors in general.
You're talking about doing it for the money.
Well, is that what you're talking about?
I guess what I'm talking about is that one of the things that success buys you is the opportunity to work in movies that you might not like, that would pay really well. do you know
well
what I mean? Because a lot of the really wonderful films that really take chances on the script and the direction and the casting are the lower budget movies, mm-hmm. and a lot of the really big budget will make you rich kind of films are more formulaic, action oriented.
It's, I think Felicity and I have both come to this conclusion that you can have the best agents in the world, but the long and the short of it is that you're in charge of your career and there's nobody above you. You have to make the decisions. And you're right, a film can come along or a TV show can come along that is no good and no one's going to tell you not to do it. You have to decide not to do it on your own. And I think this is not to be confused with just big budget. I've done some giant budget films and had the time of my life, and I'm happy with them. I'm in Sahara.
I know. I haven't seen it yet.
It's a popcorn movie.
What's your role in it?
When you get to my age, sooner or later, you get to say, the commissioner's on my ass. I'll give you 48 hours. So I say, the commissioner's on my ass. I'll give you 48 hours to Matthew McConaughey. But it's a magnificent popcorn movie. It's great fun. I did Jurassic Park 3. I've never had so much fun in my life. I mean, on one hand, it's the third of the Jurassic Park series. On the other hand, I watched the best people in the world doing work better than they'd ever done before. Some of the technical wizardry in that film boggled my mind. And if there's a Jurassic Park 4, count me in. So I think the question is not big budget or little budget. It's, does it speak to anything that has to do with the human condition? Is it despicable? Is it got cartoon violence? Is it on the right side of the questions? The correct side of the questions?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're both great, and I really appreciate your talking with us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, thank you. I love your program.
We think you're great, too.
Yeah. Oh, gee, thanks. Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy. She stars in the new movie Transamerica. Macy is the executive producer. Huffman also stars in Desperate Housewives.